Om Kataksha Kiranam Shanta Naman Mohabdaye Namaha Anantananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtiye Jada Jada Vibhagoyam Jada Jada Vibhagoyam Ajade Mai Kalpitaha Ajade Mai Kalpitaha Biti Bhage Same Chitra Biti Bhage Same Chitra Chara Chara Vibhagavat Chara Chara Vibhagavat. Jada Jada Ajada. So Jada Ajada Vibhagaha Ayam Ajade. Okay. Mayi Kalpitaha. Biti Bhage Same Chitra Chara Achara Vibhagavat. So the first compound, Jada Ajada Vibhagaha. Vibhaga means a separation, okay? The distinction, separation between Jada and Ajada. So Jada, Jada means inert, and Ajada, not inert. It's like saying sentient. So the difference between Jada and Ajada, so Jada Ajada would be a dvandva compound, Jada and Ajada, right? And then the relationship between the Jada and Ajada to the Vibhaga would be what? Shashti Tat Purusha, the sixth case in the genitive. So the Vibhaga, the separation between, right? Between is the Shashti and the dual. The Vibhaga, the division between Jada and Ajada. Jada is inert, non-sentient, and Ajada is non-inert, right? Between the inert and the non-inerts, the inert and the, see the negates, right? So the inert, inert, then with the it's non-inert, so sentient. Jada, ajada, vibhagaha, ayam. Ayam means this. In this world, this division, this distinction between the division or the separation between or division between what is inert and what is not inert. In this world that we experience, ayam, here, this, okay? Ayam, nominative singular. Ajade, locative singular. In ajade, mayi. In me, locative singular, who am ajada. Two locative singulars. In me, who am ajada, not insentient. So in me, who is ajada, not insentient. Consciousness, okay? Ajade, mayi. Kalpitaha. Kalpitaha, we use that. Swamiji usually translates that as projected. It works well. So that which is made means that which is projected. What is projected? Nominative singular. Masculine nominative singular past passive participle. PPP. Kalpitaha from Klurp. So, ayam kalpitaha. This is projected. This division between the jada and ajada, right? This is projected on me, who am ajada. So this division that we experience, this world that we experience in terms of the inert and the sentient, this whole thing is projected on me, who am ajada, who am sentient. I'm not sentient and insentient. This whole creation, which includes sentient and insentient, we can make this separation. This whole creation of sentient and insentient is projected on me, who is sentient.
Does Kalpita also mean imagined?
You can add that sense. Imagined, made, created. Right? But because it's Maya, Swamiji will just say it's projected.
And
Kalpita.
Projected onto me.
Yeah.
Who is this me? Which me?
Brahman. The me with the Atma. Then he gives an example so that you can understand what he means.
What about this ajata in reference to Atma? Are we saying consciousness or are we saying sentient?
In consciousness. Sentient and conscious are going to be the same. You know. So if I say this whole world is divided into conscious beings and unconscious beings, non-conscious beings. Like all living beings that have a sukshma sharira basically enjoy consciousness. They're all ajada. We say sentient. You know, but what we mean by sentient, if you're saying ajada, not insentient, not inert. Jada means that which doesn't have any consciousness. So that which is inert, devoid of consciousness. Ajada means that which is not devoid of consciousness, that which is not inert.
And it's devoid of consciousness in the sense that it doesn't have that material doesn't reflect consciousness?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I would say, I'm a conscious being, but the table is not. Right? So some of us are conscious beings, and so some, and then there are many things which are not, don't have consciousness. Those are all jada. All the things which have consciousness, those are ajada.
So the first jada, ajada, I'm curious as to why it's why it's chosen to translate inert and sentient, and not non-conscious.
Sometimes just in regular translation, you when we look at this world, we use these terms. Like when we say sentient beings, those are beings that have consciousness. Insentient beings are those that don't have consciousness. So if the use of sentient and insentient is problematic, then it just has to be defined. And you can say, instead of saying sentient, say beings that enjoy consciousness, and ajada, things that don't enjoy consciousness.
So that's, but the whole thing is consciousness.
Well, only from the standpoint of the Maya, Upadi, does this...
It's my dad. It's a squirrel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They run across the room.
Together. I was like...
Yeah. Okay, so...
Where were we?
Jada, ajada, vibhaga. So this division between the conscious beings and unconscious things, okay, between... Is kalpita, it's projected, on me, on me, the Atma, who is ajada. This division of sentient and insentient that exists within the Maya Upadi, really, that is projected on me, who is only sentient. I'm not sentient and insentient, I am only consciousness. I'm not conscious and unconscious, I am only consciousness. So this creation that enjoys this duality of conscious and unconscious, this whole thing is projected on me, who is only consciousness, right? I don't have anything unconscious or non-conscious or non-sentient about me. Okay, so now he gives an example. Bitti is a wall, right? Bitti.
A wall?
A wall.
Okay.
Okay. A wall or a flat surface. Okay. Bhaga is a portion. So, like, on it's in the locative, on a portion, a bhaga, a portion of a wall on a flat surface. Same means which is all of the same. So say you have a wall, and I think Tejo Mayananda said in a, or whoever's translation it was, said on a pure white surface. That's what's literally being said there is on a bhaga, on a portion of a bhitti, of a wall, which is sama. That's also locative singular. It means the whole thing is exactly the same. It's just one smooth wall. So you can say just one white surface of a wall. White. It doesn't say white there, but that's the idea. That it's a wall that is smooth and all of the same. The whole wall is the same. So on that portion of a wall, chitra. Chitra means a painting. Okay. Chitra also as an adjective means variegated colors, but chitra also means a painting. Okay.
So in the book it says chitra.
Well, we have to break it. Let me see.
The bottom.
Yeah, I noticed Swami Vagishananda chants chitra.
There's different versions of this. Do you all have chitra? You've got chitra on this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any difference because the compound will break in that way.
Okay.
In this version that I have, chitra is part of the compound.
So when you do avigraha, it becomes chitra.
Yeah. So.
Oh yeah.
Let's see how it breaks. I think chitra is in the compound. I think it's better, but let's take a look at it as part of the compound. Mm-hmm. Chitra is a painting. Chitta is that which moves, moving, and achitta, non-moving. Usually, chitta achitta means moving and immovable. Things that are moving and things that are achara, immovable, stationary. Moving and stationary. Chara, achara. So it's not going to be a dwandwa, right? vibhaga, the separation, the division of moving and immovable things on a painting. So if you have chitray, that's locative singular, and that means on a painting. If you have chitra as part of the compound, I noticed in different texts, I have different versions of Advaita Makaranda, and I noticed that there are just little variances here and there in some of the verses, but the idea is the same. So here, it's a compound or not a compound. So if we take this vat at the end, vat is an indeclinable, you know, and it means like. So like the division of immovable and stationary things, those things that are movable and immovable on a painting, right? In a painting. Okay? Like the movable and immovable things on a painting, which is on a portion of a wall, a part of a wall, which is the same. So you put, say you have a white surface, you've got a white wall, you've got a wall, and then on a portion, say you have that big wall, you have a square, you have a portion of the abhaga, a portion of that wall. It's all the same, it's just a white, flat surface. And then on that flat surface, there is a painting, somebody's painted a picture on it. And in that picture, you know, there's trees and animals and rocks and all kinds of movable and immovable things. It's just a picture of a forest, for instance, a living forest, or a picture of a city. So that picture of the city that has all of this variegated activity and non-activity, movable and immovable things, has for its substratum, right, for its what we call the, for its adhishtana, for its substratum, one white changeless surface. You see what I mean? And so like that, I am that one white changeless surface, you know? The pure consciousness, right? I'm likened to just a wall which is exactly the same. It's just a smooth wall on which this painting has been superimposed. So like that, on consciousness, on me the conscious being, this division of sentient and insentient, moving and immovable, these words are using chitta, achitta, they use all of the time, the movable and immovable things of the creation, the conscious, unconscious things in the creation. All of these things are just projected on me, who am the adhishtana. Now, when we use the term adhishtana, adhishtana is going to be that because of which something which is mithya, you know, depends upon for its being. Without the adhishtana, what is mithya or what is projected upon it cannot be there. So what is mithya? You know, mithya is that which anything that depends upon something else for its being. That thing which it depends upon, what the mithya depends upon for its being, is called the adhishtana. Mithya is that which has no independent being. Like if you were to take away the adhishtana, then the mithya can't be there. The level of reality that maya is given, maya which is the material cause for the projection of nama-rupa, right, for names and forms, that maya is totally dependent for its being on the adhishtana. That's why it's mithya. The adhishtana is Brahman, is the Atma. So here when they use the word kalpita, they're talking about maya, they're talking about that which is projected, which is by nature mithya, that has no being of its own. So that mithya is dependent on me, the adhishtana. So if you look here where it says jada ajada vibhaga, yeah, this jada ajada vibhaga, right, kalpita, is projected on me, mayi, who am ajada. I being the one who's receiving that projection is the adhishtana, because you can't have a projection without an adhishtana. So the adhishtana is that which the projection depends upon for its being, or it can't be. Like even if you use the clay pot, The clay is the adhishtana of the mithya namarupa pot. You know, if you take away the adhishtana, this namarupa pot can't be. Rope snake, the rope is the adhishtana for the mithya snake. So the mithya snake can't be there without the adhishtana rope. So I am the adhishtana for the maya projection. The maya projection has sentient, insentient, conscious, unconscious, movable, immovable. It has vibhaga, it has distinction, differences. But all of those differences have me, who am only consciousness, for their adhishtana. And adhishtana means then that which is the truth means what is actually there. Like, what is the satyam, the paramarthika satyam, the absolute reality of what is actually there, is the adhishtana. So, for instance, in the clay pot, the clay is the adhishtana. Right? If I take away the adhishtana, there is no pot. Rope snake. Rope is the adhishtana. If I take away the rope, there is no snake. It is totally dependent. What is really the only thing that is really there is rope, is clay. Here, if I am the adhishtana, the one that is the adhishtana of the projection, then that means what is really here is only non-dual consciousness. You can just say, I don't need the non-dual. What is actually here is consciousness.
And you can't take that away. You can't take existence away.
No.
The existence.
That's right. You can't do anything with that. And that is what is actually here. And so though you're experiencing something that is conscious and something that is inert in this creation, you're experiencing all these vibhagas, all of these differences in the creation, all of them, whether you view them from within the creation as sentient or inert, conscious or unconscious, in fact, the only thing that is here is consciousness. There is no such thing as sentient and inert in terms of the adhishtana. So there's nothing here but consciousness. Even though from the standpoint of the maya upadhi, this we would not say is conscious. No sukshma sharira. There's nothing here for this table doesn't have a subtle body, doesn't have a sukshma sharira for it to say, oh, I'm a conscious being. I have a sukshma sharira, so I can say I'm a conscious being, but when I say that, when I'm saying that, I'm actually superimposing the consciousness on the maya. Right? Because in fact, this is as much consciousness as this is. There's not more or less. It's the adhishtana is the adhishtana of the whole. And so this is consciousness, this is consciousness. But if I hold a mirror up to the sun and a rock up to the sun, the mirror reflects the sun, the rock doesn't. Both are inert. Both are jada, right? It's not like the mirror that has a, as though sukshma sharira, it's not as though the mirror has become sentient. Or that the mirror is more sentient, enjoys consciousness any more than the rock.
So I'm just as inert as the table is.
Yeah. But you could say it the other way. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's incorrect to say it that way, because you could say, I'm just I have the very consciousness that I am is the very consciousness that the table is. In fact, there is no such thing as inert. Inert is something that is a classification that exists from within the creation based upon whether or not there's a subtle body, a sukshma sharira, or not. Mm-hmm. It's the same when you dream. In the dream, there are objects that don't reflect consciousness, like the table, and there are objects which do, like all living beings and plants and animals. They reflect consciousness. So we have the same vibhaga, the same distinction within the dream. But it's easy to understand in the dream where the whole thing is really has for its adhishtana, you know, for its actual reality of what is there, is consciousness only, right? So this division, this vibhaga of conscious, having consciousness and non-conscious, exists only from within the maya upadhi,
yeah,
the conditioning engine, you see? So that's what's being said here, and they use this famous example. This example comes in many different forms, in these, especially in the Prakarana Granthas, using and in Panchadashi, you know, Vijaranya will use it. It comes a lot.
So the walls of consciousness.
Yeah.
So Carol, in the Chitra Chara Achara Vipaga, is that a tritiya between the Chitra and or not a tritiya, a set a, on
the chitra? No, it's a Chara Achara is Dvandva.
Chara Achara, but then that
the separation between Vibhaga, between, and then then it's a locative, septami.
A locative, right.
Chitre.
So it's something between the Chitra and the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Chitre, then Characharayoho, Vibhaga. That's for Sanskrit students who are studying compounds right now. Okay? let's chant this. Jada, jada, let's see. Katakshakirana. Jada, jada vibhagoyam. Jada, jada vibhagoyam. Ajade mai kalpitaha. Ajade mai kalpitaha. Piti bhage same chitra. Piti bhage same chitra. Chara chara vibhagavat. Chara chara vibhagavat. This is again in breaking this. This is what Swamiji will not break a compound. Like, say, in mine, I have chitra chara chara vibhagavat. And so he'll always chant all the way through. So it would be like this. So repeat after me. Jada jada vibhagoyam. Jada jada vibhagoyam. Ajade mai kalpitaha. Ajade mai kalpitaha. Piti bhage same chitra chara chara vibhagavat. Piti bhage same chitra chara chara vibhagavat. Because he won't break the compound. For you, if you have chitre, then it would be piti bhage same chitre chara chara vibhagavat.
Is it kalpitah?
No, it's kalpitaha. Now, it would be kalpitah if it's a ka is following. If another word follows that begins with a k or k, it would be kalpitaf if the word that follows is a p or pa in terms of sanji. But if nothing follows, it'll just be kalpitaha. Is that clear? Excellent.
Yeah, I'll ask you later.
Okay. When there's a b following, say if we don't make any type of break between the kalpitaha and piti, then it would be kalpito, if there's no break. But whenever there's a pause, even the pause between a quarter, you know, then you break the sandhi. Except when the break would mean that you're breaking a compound, then that's why Swamiji won't do any break. He'll just go all the way through. Very clear on that? Okay, we've got just a few minutes left, and I didn't read the second verse. I thought we'd only do one verse. So let me talk about, because Penny brought up something interesting for the next. In the next verse, we're actually eliminating the sakshi, the witness. And so I want to kind of explain a little bit about how the sakshi, the use of the term sakshi, translates as witness, is always initially used as part of the teaching methodology to differentiate the Atma yourself in Driksha Viveka, in the seer seeing differentiation. The sakshi is used in order to differentiate the conscious being consciousness from whatever is being objectified. But in the end, when you have objectified everything, then you have to look at the nature of awareness itself. And then you ask, is awareness, when it's been differentiated from every upadhi, every level of upadhi, of conditioning agent, is awareness itself a sakshi? Because, in fact, if that sakshitvam is kept, the nature of the sakshi being a witness, which also is like saying that the nature of Atma is a witness, is a knower. It's the same, right? I witness this. It's a verb. I'm the witness of this. It means I know this. I see this. I'm the knower of this. I'm aware of this. That's how we use sakshi. So this sakshi has to resolve into chaitanya, into awareness itself. And so the Swamiji will say, like the knower, that agent noun has to be eliminated. So if you look at in the Drikdrisha Viveka, we take that Viveka, that discrimination between the Drik, the seer, and the Drisha, the seen. We use it all the way through, you know, till we use it really we keep it, that see or seen differentiation, even at the level of the mind, the level of the buddhi. So if you remember the Drikdrisha, it starts always with from the standpoint of you as an embodied being here in this creation, as a person in this creation. And you start with the Drikdrisha Viveka from what is your normal experience. And your normal experience that no one would disagree with is that I, this person, am, as the subject, am aware of everything outside of my skin as the object. So I am the subject, you are all objects to me. And same for you. You are the subject, and everything that you perceive through your sense organs, external to your physical body, are objects. And that being so, you are very clear that you are not the object. We don't have to teach you this. Right? That subject-object distinction is something that you take for granted, that what I'm aware of, I am not. I'm the conscious being that illumines something, right, which is not me, which is not sentient. It's not me. Does not enjoy the consciousness, conscious being, which I am. So I can easily make a differentiation. The first crack in that understanding is this piece of logic, piece of just pointing out a fact, that in fact your five sense organs that illumine this world external to the physical body, those same five sense organs also illumine the physical body. Like if you were to lose your sense organs one by one, not only would you lose your perception of the world external to the physical body, you would lose your perception of the physical body. And so the physical body really is known to you only because of your sense perception. And so then you realize that, oh, just like I have a subject-object relationship with this world, I have a subject-object relationship with this physical body. This body is an object of my sense perception. So now the logic that I take for granted in reference to the world external to the physical body has to be applied to this physical body, because it's the same in terms of subject-object relationship. Sense perception. See what I mean? So now we move in one step to the recognition, well, that's true. This world is an object of my perception, as is this body. But then I realize that these sense organs themselves are an object of perception by what? By my mind. And so now the sense organs' mind, the sense organs themselves become an object, and the mind becomes the subject. And then we use examples like, for instance, I know that I can see. I know that my eyes are working. I know that my ears are working. I know that I have a sense of touch. I know that I don't. If I lose, if my eyes dim, I am aware of that. So the condition of the sense organs are also known to me, whether they're working, whether they're not working. And so the sense organs are objects, the mind now becomes the subject. Another logic that we use there is that if your mind, the sense organs themselves, can require the focus of the mind in order for them to function or for them to even be known. For instance, if your mind is daydreaming, your sense organs are present, right? But not to you. Your experience is going to be only whatever the mind is doing. If the mind is daydreaming, if it's whatever it's doing, that's what you're going to be experiencing. the mind has to connect, has to be focused, to be using the sense organs in order for the sense organs to function, or for even for them to be in your consciousness, right? And so the sense organ, the mind as the subject then, is responsible for the functioning of the sense organs, and also even for their existence from your subjective standpoint.
Right? If the sense organs were the subject, you'd always be attentive to them.
They would always be functioning.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're objectified, and they require the mind.
Yeah.
They're objectified by the mind, and they require the support of the mind for them to function. So you sit there, when you're teaching this, you sit there with, sit in that position for a while, using these different logics that are not just logics, they're just pointing to your experience so that you can recognize, oh yes, there's a subject-object relationship there, and the sense organs, they're functioning as well as their even knownness depends, and they need to be blessed by the mind. And so now the mind becomes the subject. Right, so here we are, subject-object, but now the mind is the subject, and do we stay there with the mind as the subject? You know, or is the mind itself known? Is the mind itself objectified? Now here's where we're going to get into the Sakshi. Is the mind, we can say buddhi-manas, you know, are the vrittis, even the ahankara, the I notion is a vritti, is a thought modification. Are these vrittis, thought modifications, known or not? And you'd say, yes, they are. Because I know what I'm thinking. I'm aware, I can sit, even in Vipassana, different types of meditation, not just Vipassana, many types of meditation. You can sit, and the idea is to just be aware of the thoughts as they come and go. You know, of the feelings, of the moods, of the different types of vrittis, of thought modifications as they come and go. So you watch them rise and set, rise and set, rise and set. Now, that means that these are known. They come into knownness and go out of knownness, right? A thought comes into being, goes out of being. So that means that there is a knower, a sakshi, a witness of the thought. There's a subject to the object thought. Okay? So at this point, whether the mind, whether we're looking at it as an intellection, the buddhi, an imaginal thought, you know, fluctuating thought, an ahankara, any type of vritti, any type of antakarana vritti, any type of thought modification is by its nature known. Right? You're aware of it. You say, yes, I'm aware of that thought. And when I say, yes, I'm aware of that thought, that's the sakshi. Okay? So now, at this point, we have the sakshi, the one, the me, who's aware of the mind, all the vrittis. Okay? We can even talk about ajnanam. I'm also aware of ajnanam, of ignorance. I can say, I don't know Chinese. I know Sanskrit, but I don't know Chinese. How do you know you don't know Chinese? I know that I don't know Chinese. Yeah, I'm aware of my knowledge and I'm aware of my ignorance. The sakshi again, right? So now the question is, oh, okay, is there anyone behind the sakshi aware of the sakshi? Now, because we can do that in terms of the body, we have the sense organs. In terms of the sense organs, we have the mind. In terms of the mind, we have the sakshi, the conscious me that illumines the mind. Now, is there a sakshi of the sakshi? Is there a witness of the witness? We don't have anywhere to go now. We kind of hit a wall. And so now we've hit the wall. We're at the wall, the sakshi wall. Okay. Now, the question is this sakshi, the self, the atma? Because there's nothing behind it, right? So now we're at the pratyagatma. We're at the innermost, pratyag means innermost. We are at the innermost conscious being. We're at the innermost self. Because we can't, there's no upadhi, there's no one to, no way to get beyond, behind that, to illuminate. We're not going to have consciousness illumine consciousness. So now the question is pratyek atma, pratyek means innermost. Is this innermost self, is it the witness, a sakshi? Is this innermost self a sakshi? Because from the standpoint of the mind is known. Now when we say the mind is known, it becomes the object and I become the subject. Am I, like in all of the other instances where the eyes, the sense organs, are the knower, you know, of the body and world, the mind is the knower, right? Because of the mind is an instrument, it is the knower of the sense organs, like that. Does that mean that the Atma, the Pratyekatma, is the knower, is the sakshi of the mind? Does that relationship continue to hold when we get to the Pratyekatma itself? With me?
Mm-hmm.
So now, is the Atma by nature a sakshi? That's what we come down to. We would say, if it is a sakshi, what is its instrument of knowing? Like, for instance, the sense organs are an instrument, right, for knowing, subject-object, seer-seen, hearer-heard. The mind is an instrument for thinking, for using the sense organs, for vrittis, for antakarana vrittis, for thought modifications. It itself is an instrument. It exists within duality. Even the ahankara, which is objectified, is a condition of the mind. Okay? Now, does awareness have an instrument for knowing? Because once you say it's a knower, what is its instrument for knowing? So you can say, well, the mind is its instrument. No, the mind isn't its instrument because the mind is known. See what I mean? The mind is known. And so once because the mind is known, there's a subject-object relationship between the subject and the object mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't say the mind is the instrument. Yes, the mind is the instrument. But that instrument is a knower from one perspective. You know, it's a knower of the sense organs in the world, for instance. But from another perspective, it's the known.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the sense organs are both the knower from their own perspective and the known from the perspective of the mind. So now, the mind is known. And so, you can't say that the Atma, which illumines the mind, right, uses the mind as its instrument to know the mind. You see what I mean? And so let's look at it. We'll just take one more thing. We'll make it clear, I think. If I get rid of, like, say, for instance, the subject-object relationship in terms of everything external to my body, all of these things can come and go, but that doesn't have any effect on me because they're objects. They're not me. So if you all walk out of the room, I'm just left sitting here. You're coming and going into the room doesn't do anything to my coming and going into the room, right? Because subject-object relationship. So like that, if I get rid of everything that I can objectify, let it all walk out of the room, okay, that everything external to my skin walks out of the room, my physical body, which is also objectified, goes out of the room, right? My sense organs, which are also objectified, go out of the room. The antakarana, the mind, and all of its vrittis, all of its modifications, goes out of the room. In fact, all of the upadis, all of the conditioning adjuncts, go out of the room. I'm just left here. Right? Now, what am I doing? What am I doing as the conscious being? Am I knowing anything?
Are you witnessing?
Am I witnessing anything? Now, the thing is, what am I witnessing? And with what? What am I witnessing, and with what? So we would say, the term witness is only a convenience to help me discriminate between my being and that which is illumined, right? So if you say, we can use the drishtanta, the sun. Is the sun illumining the earth? You can say, yeah. But is it performing its another, but if we start using the language, we could say, because of the sun, the earth is illumined. Right? Because of the sun. But is the sun performing a karma of illumining the earth? What if I got rid of the earth? Then has the sun, is the sun now not illumining the earth from its own standpoint? It said, no. The luminosity is intransitive. You know an intransitive verb? Mm-hmm. Like if I say the sun shines, the verb shining reflects back onto the subject. Another intransitive, if the child cries, the crying is intransitive, it reflects back on the subject. It's not an act upon something. Mm-hmm. If I say the boy hit the ball, that verb hit is transitive, means that it's in relationship to the object. And so here is the sakshi, is consciousness transitive or intransitive? If it's intransitive, it just means that the consciousness itself is the nature, right? That consciousness reflects back onto the subject. It's not conscious of something. Like if I say, I know this, that's transitive, means the knowing is directed at an object. I know this. Is consciousness a knower, where it says, I know this, means that the conscious being is performing an act of illumining an object? Or is it, because more like the sun, it is luminosity itself, it is consciousness itself, and so whatever is in the vicinity of consciousness is by that very fact illumined. So it's intransitive. We say the consciousness that we're calling the sakshi, when we call it the sakshi, we say the mind, another way of languaging it is the mind, because it rises in consciousness, reflects consciousness, and is therefore known. That's one way of talking. Reflects consciousness and is therefore experienced as known. But is the consciousness performing an act of knowing? I say, if you get rid of all of the objects, consciousness remains. Get rid of all of the objects, consciousness remains as consciousness, not consciousness of anything, right? It's just consciousness. But if something there is there, then from the standpoint of that thing that is there, that thing is known. And since it is known from the standpoint of the object, we immediately assume there's a knower to the known.
Yeah. Right?
But instead, once we do this differentiation, we're left with the nature of that knower being getting rid of the ER, the doership, and recognizing it only intransitively as mm-hmm. consciousness itself. So when you do the subject-object, you keep the sakshi only from the standpoint of the upadi. But when you remove the conditioning adjunct, you realize that consciousness itself is not performing any function at all. And so the sakshi resolves into self-evident consciousness. So the sakshi resolves into, in Sanskrit, into chaitanya, into consciousness, chaitanya, which is swaprakasha, self-evident, self-luminous, swaprakasha, or swatasiddha. Swatasiddha means it's self-evident. Means it doesn't require any type of luminary, doesn't do anything, it is its own being, it's self-established as consciousness. It doesn't require to be illumined, nor does it illumine. It is luminosity itself. Right.
And that luminosity comes in the form of knownness, right?
Yeah.
A sense of knownness.
It's a sense of knownness from the standpoint of the upadi. Like of the thought, you would say this thought is known.
Right? But even when you take the upadis away, there's a sense of knownness. Left.
Yes, and that's what we say swaprakashatvam, swatasiddha, it's self-evident. Right? It's self-evident. It's known in and of itself by its very nature, not with any type of subject-object. Mm-hmm.
at that stage, Carol, you know, we talk of Sakshi always in the waking state, but at that state, if you bring in deep sleep, when the mind is not there in deep sleep, then doesn't it, why can't we talk of it like that? Because then it becomes more evident that the mind is not there to act as a knower, but there's still Chaitanya in deep sleep.
I know, but that's one of the, that's bringing in another prakriya, where we show that that the Atma can't be a knower, because in deep sleep, when the mind is in unmanifest, the sense organs and mind are in avyakta, unmanifest condition, there's no knowership, right? And so knowership, so that's going into the next, one of the next prakriyas, you know, which is called the Avastha Trayasakshi, the witness of the three states of experience, right? That Sakshi was negated in that Avastha Trayasakshi. You know, the three states negate each other. The deep sleep state negating any type of duality, the experience of any type of knower-known subject-object relationship. Knowership exists within the creation, and it requires a sukshma sharira, indriyas, sense organs, antakarana, the mind, in order for there to be any type of subject-object relationship. That's all resolved in deep sleep when those karanas, the indriyas, the sense organs, you know, and the antakarana, the mind, are in a resolved state. If you can be without knowership, knowership does not belong to you. Anything you can be without is not you, right?
In deep sleep, the knownness doesn't seem to be everything.
The knownness, because you always think of knownness in terms of knowership.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's a big thing, in fact, is to get that under your belt, that you, even now, as you're sitting here right now, if you just focus a little bit just on your own presence, you are not performing any action whatsoever. You're self-evident, you're self-shining, and you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
And you're never doing anything. It doesn't matter what you're perceiving from the standpoint of the upadis, the mind or the sense organs, whatever experiencing you're having. All these experiences are upadhi bound, right? They're bound. They're brought about by the conditioning adjunct, and so because they have for their adhishtana, chaitanya, awareness, right? The awareness, your being is pervasive and present to every experience that you have, but if you differentiate between the perceptual experiences and your own presence, you'll see you're not doing anything at all. You're not knowing anything. You're not creating any type of... there's no change, no kartritvam, there's no doership, there's no bhoktritvam, there's no enjoyership, nothing. There is just me. And this me is the changeless constant. In every experience, it's never not there.
And this applies to self, self-talk as well,
Self-talk, when we're talking about self-talk, that has to do with the mind and how the mind, the buddhi, you know, is how do you talk to yourself? That's all the antakarana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, on a conscious level, the conscious mind, there, you can have a critical buddhi, that you're engaged in some dialogue with somebody and then you say something and the buddhi comes in, oh, why did you say that? that's self-talk, you know. So it's, in fact, that's all within duality, though. It's very important to look at that, to become cognizant of that self-talk. Does the self-talk that goes on within your mind, right, is that something that you would like to be around? If there was a person out here that was talking to you like that, would you seek them out or would you run away?
Get out of here.
Yeah. So you want the self-talk to be somebody that you would like to be around.
Yeah. You mean like by self-talk, the inner critic?
Yeah. Inner critic or inner friend.
Right.
We want the inner critic for all the negatives to transform into an inner friend, mm-hmm. to like the Swamiji. You know?
Well, Ayani would have self-talk that's all positive about...
No, Agnani can still have negative self-talk, but then they're going to be working on that.
Hopefully. Sorry.
So, in terms of this text, though, and this idea of witnessing, Is it true that, because in verse 9, it says, I'm the witness, I'm all pervasive, and I'm always dear to me. And in 10, he says, I'm the witness of the ahankara, trying to separate the ego from it. In 11, it says, I'm the witness of the states, waking, dream, and deep sleep.
That's right.
Those states aren't me.
Yeah.
And then 12, he says, I'm the witness of waking and dream, so how can they belong to me? I'm not that.
Yeah.
And 13, he says, I'm the knower of the shed vikaras. I'm the knower of the six modifications.
Right.
And 13, I'm the changeless knower. I'm the changeless witness. And now we come to, like, 20.
Yeah.
And the question is, it seems to me, is, I mean, witnesshood. So all these verses, I'm the witness, the witness. But witnesshood is an attribute.
No.
The attribute of being a witness. So now the question is, how could Atma and Brahman, who we know is attributeless, doesn't have any attributes, how can Atma be Brahman?
Okay.
How can an Atma with attributes be Brahman?
Exactly.
So 20 is what debunks that, right?
Right. But you have to understand, so we have these prakriyas, the teaching methodology. Teaching methodologies, all of them start from where you are as a jiva, with all the ajnana, with all of the ignorance, with all the what we call adhyasa, with all the superimposition, to where you take yourself to be this, right? This body, this mind, this sense organs, each one of them individually. You know, like in the body, you say, you know, I'm a woman of such and such an age, I weigh so much. It's all of this superimposition of the mind, you know, I'm happy, sad, etc. This all just natural superimposition where you take your being to be one with the upadhi, okay? So, in every prakriya, there is a viveka, a discrimination that has to take place initially. And that discrimination is to differentiate the atma from the anatma, to differentiate me, the conscious being, from what I had mistakenly taken to be myself, right? Mm. So all of these are different methodologies for doing that viveka, that differentiation.
Okay.
Now say the differentiation has been done, even to the point of, say, in yoga, where you recognize the purusha, you recognize the stable nature of the knower, right? The conscious being inside, abiding inside, the stable nature of the knower. We've done the viveka up to that point. Now that the viveka has been done, now we have to look at, all right, what is the nature of the sakshi? Is the sakshi, from its own standpoint, actually a sakshi? It is a sakshi from the standpoint of the upadhi, right? But when we get to the point that viveka has been done from these levels and these levels, you get to the nature of the sakshi itself, then the sakshitvam of the self has to be negated. In the end, the sakshitvam means the state of being a sakshi for the atma now has to be negated. It has done its job. You know, all of these teaching methodologies make me recognize that I am the stable being that doesn't come and go, you know, from the standpoint of the mind, the body, the sense organs, the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state. I am the stable being, you know, the witness of all of this. But in the end, the witness, after all of this has been taken care of, the next stage is to get rid of the knowership of the witness.
And so what's the negation of this witness now?
Well, once you remove all of the, you have to analyze what is actually causing the knower, known, seer, seen duality.
Yeah.
That duality depends upon the upadhi.
Yeah.
Without the upadhi, without the sense organs, with the mind, etc., there can't be any subject-object relationship. Then you look at the dream state, you see, oh, the subject-object relationship depends from the jiva's standpoint on the sense organs and mind of the dream character. From Ishwara's standpoint, it depends totally upon the presence of the Ishwara upadhi. Right? If the Ishwara upadhi is in unmanifest condition, there's not even any sakshi, the Ishwara upadhi itself is not known. Right? So like that, even you can notice, like, if you're having a dream and there are no characters in the dream, there's just scenery. That's you as Ishvara. Now say, into this dream that has no characters, some characters come in, you know, animals, people, etc., that you have no identification with. You know, that's just Ishvara. You're the dream that antakarana vritti is, because it's sukshma, it's sattva, reflects consciousness. That whole thing is known. There's no one that you're identified with where you're looking from within the dream. But if you enter the dream as a character in the dream, then from the standpoint of the character, you are experiencing the dream with your dream sense organs and dream mind that exists with that dream character. So the dream itself, you go in and out of being Ishvara. The Ishvara standpoint, you're not identified with anything, you're the whole. Or the Jiva standpoint, you're identified with the Jiva and experiencing the dream from within those sense organs, etc. But all knowership requires the upadhi, whether the Ishvara upadhi or the Jiva upadhi, you know, not the Atma. The Atma is the consciousness which allows the whole upadhi to be known, mm-hmm. right? Or allows the, from the standpoint of the Jiva, the sukshma sharira, with the sense organs in mind, to have the capacity to know from within the dream. But there is no knowership from the standpoint of the Atma. There's just self-effulgence. Swaprakashatvam. Self-effulgence. Prakasha means shining. It's like saying it's its own consciousness. Prakasha
is
used for consciousness.
This is happening even while we're witnessing, right? I mean,
the self of the witness is Atma. The witness is really nothing but Atma. Right? There is no real witness. The witness is a language that we use to differentiate the self-evident, my self-evident nature from the vritti that is known. So the sakshi, it's not that there is a sakshi other than the Atma. We call the Atma, the self-evident, non-witnessing Atma, the sakshi, only from the standpoint of the upadhi, to help you, the jiva, who has totally identified with that upadhi, to differentiate the self from the knownness, the objectification that the upadhi, the mind, is enjoying. Right, if I say something is known, then I must be the knower. That's how we think within duality. This is known, I'm the knower. So when you think, oh, my mind is known, then yes, I'm the knower. So I end up as the knower until we take that next step to realize, oh, the knower is actually there. The knower is not knowing anything. It is just that sakshi really is just pure swaprakasha, chaitanya.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that was good.
Say our prayer.
That was very good.
Om Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om.